Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now another Earth Day conversation about stewardship and the Earth, this time with a look at crowdsourcing science. We've talked about specific examples of this kind of crowdsourcing on the show before, from the best bird watching spots to a harbor seal census under the Verrazano Bridge. Remember that? And WNYC even has a new DIY cicada tracker this year. Well, my next guest has written a book about the so-called citizen science projects in the Hudson Valley where she lives. She's gone looking for bats, pulled up water chestnuts, and monitored eels in a tributary near Poughkeepsie. Akiko Bush is a writer, essayist, and faculty member at the School of Visual Arts. She's now the author of a new book, The Incidental Steward, Reflections on Citizen Science. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you so much.
So you're a journalist who writes about design and art. Now you're a citizen who does science. Are they compatible?
There's a really logical progression there. I wrote about design for many years, and my definition of design was always that it had to do with a sense of fit, how a spoon fits the hand, how a human body fits into a chair, how a building fits into the landscape. And when I started writing about the natural world, it seemed like a pretty logical extension of that, because I think the sort of most important sense of fit we're facing now is how we can fit into the natural environment. So it doesn't seem like a natural progression of interests, but in fact it really was.
And you live in the Hudson Valley, and you've seen peacocks and water chestnuts and cardinals, woodcocks, green herons, bats. Where do you live? Where is this paradise?
Well, I live in the southern Hudson Valley. I had grown up there, and then after college moved away, lived in different cities for a number of years, and then moved back about 25 years ago to the Hudson Valley. And things were changing. There were many more deer than there were when I was growing up, more coyote. The coyote population certainly wasn't there when I was in the 60s and 70s. So all kinds of things were changing. There were a lot of different non-native plants moving in. So I began to become really interested in kind of these, the way the environment was changing in these increments.
And we'll get into some of your particular projects. I'll also open the phones here for any citizen scientists in the audience. We'll have to keep your calls brief. You can't do the full abstract of your experiments. But if you're working on any citizen scientist project, give us a call and tell us what it is. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, if there are fellow citizen scientists out there. For Akiko Bush, who wrote The Incidental Steward, Reflections on Citizen Science, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. So one of your projects is searching for a radio-tagged bat roosting in the woods behind your house.
Yeah, that was the first one. That's what got me involved in this. It was spring, I think about 7 or 8 years ago, and an intern from the DEC rolled up in his Jeep in our driveway, and he had a radio antenna, and they had been tracking bats from across the river, and a maternal colony apparently had been tracked they were roosting in the woods up behind our house. So he asked our permission to go up there and see if he could locate them, and I said, sure, but only if you let me tag along. So I went up with him. We went up the mountain and found the bats. And what was amazing about it, what I remember most from that afternoon is, of course, it was late afternoon, so we didn't see them. But what we did was we heard them, or rather, he heard them. It was a very distant clicking sound that probably would have bypassed me altogether had I been by myself. But we tracked the bat up there from its radio signal. And then if you stood still and listened very, very carefully, you could hear this kind of distant universe of sound, this faint clicking, and those were the bats. So that's what I discovered in many of these projects, is they require a different kind of attention, a different kind of tuning in that at least I'm not very good at doing naturally.
Which, funny enough, is something that artists, I think, are very trained to do, tune in with their senses.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
So there's another crossover between your old world and your new world, or your one world and your other world. Did you learn anything about the bats? worth knowing scientifically?
Well, the great thing about hanging out with these scientists for all these projects is that other than what you just learn about, you know, changing numbers or that kind of thing, is scientists live with doubt so much more intimately, and they're so much more familiar with it than the rest of us are. And so did I draw any conclusions? No, absolutely not. But I got some data and I got some facts, and that was the important thing.
I'm glad you brought up doubt, because I think it's something that people don't realize about scientists if they're not scientists. They think, oh, the hard scientists. They're looking for A plus B equals C.
Yeah.
But there is so much uncertainty in science, and that's so much of what scientists do, is manage uncertainty.
Absolutely. And this is something – this is a fact I really loved coming across, is that they just – live with doubt. They're on intimate terms with it, and they understand it, and it's just part of their thinking. And that's, I think, an interesting lesson for the rest of us.
Rocco in Brooklyn, you're doing some citizen science?
Yeah. I have a house on the Chesapeake Bay, and in the wintertime, I bring back oysters to eat. But I always try to put a couple of dozens in the Gowanus Canal. And uh-huh. As far as I can see, they're still alive.
That's good. Citizen species planting. Good. Hopefully they will have a good effect. You know, sometimes implanted species, not always so good, but probably in that case, pretty good.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that quite qualifies as citizen science. I think one of the things that's interesting is that the definition of citizen science right now is pretty wide open. At the Cornell lab, where a lot of this, not all of it, but where a lot of this started, they define citizen science as projects in which volunteers partner with scientists to answer real-world questions. I think other people have a much broader definition, speaking of the Gowanus Canal. Judith Enck is the EPA Region 2 Administrator, and her definition of citizen science is it's really anyone who's using any tool focusing on scientific measure or portrayal. And as an example, she shows a YouTube video that a couple of guys took from their window of a huge wash of sewage moving down the Gowanus Canal after a big storm. And she, you know, in her view, just, you know, filming this and bringing it to our attention qualifies as citizen science.
And are there risks to citizen science? For example, you write about white nose syndrome, the disease wiping out entire colonies of bats in the eastern United States. And there are concerns that the fungus associated with that disease might have been carried from cave to cave by people who didn't clean their shoes or their gear properly. Maybe they were untrained enough as scientists.
Yeah, I think, if I'm correct, I think those were hikers in the woods or in the mountains up behind New Paltz, up where those caves were.
Sure.
I think in most cases, the scientists who and their volunteers follow pretty strict protocols on, you know, exactly not doing that.
Debbie in Westchester, you're doing citizen science?
I do. I deal with my students. I teach a course called New Visions Environmental Science and Sustainability, and we've been doing citizen science for the last 5 years. We take part in the DEC eel study of the migratory eels with the Ossining High School students that are doing the research there as well. We've done bird counts for the migratory hawk watch with the Audubon in mm-hmm. Bedford. It's like a really great thing because students learn so much more by being out in nature and actually participating in science that makes a difference to scientists around the world.
Debbie, thank you. You did something similar to that, right?
Yeah, I was involved in the eel project as well on the tributaries a little farther to the north. I think one of the really terrific things about citizen science is that it can use people of all ages, and there's some wonderful, wonderful projects that involve kids. And kids have actually, well, I mean, apart from counting eels, which they love doing, kids are responsible for some pretty interesting research. There was an example, I can't remember how many years ago, but where a couple of kids that were, I think, 9 and 11, found a spotted ladybug that had not been seen, I think it was in Maryland, for a number of years. But, you know, kids are always out collecting bugs and worms and insects and, you know, whatever's out there. So if you can get them to look at it and report on what they find, it's a great way to get new information.
That counting reminds me that I guess I was a citizen scientist on my honeymoon. My wife and I spent part of it on an Earthwatch project in Kenya, counting, doing a census by this lake, Lake Naivasha. And we were doing a bird census, uh-huh. And we were doing a plant census. And we just thought of ourselves as volunteers.
Oh, no, no. You were citizen scientists.
I guess
we
were citizen scientists.
Right.
So I mentioned that we talk about these kind of urban naturalist projects from time to time on the show. Here's one example. We heard from naturalist Paul Ciswerda about New Yorkers contributing to a harbor seal census right here in New York Harbor. And he described a model based on what the Audubon Society does with bird watchers. And here's a clip.
They ask citizen scientists to go out and help them get a big picture of what's going on. So what we do is we go out and simply identify the seals, how many are there, and also what species might be seen. It's really pretty dramatic to have the background of Manhattan and see what I call real wildlife.
And he even used the term citizen science in that clip. So it doesn't have to be in your idyllic spot in the lower Hudson Valley, even in this busy harbor in this busy city.
Oh, it can be done anywhere, absolutely.
Before you go, can you give our listeners some tips on how to find a good project to participate in if you've given anybody some Earth Day inspiration?
I think citizen science, you know, is happening across the country in every state on land and water. There are air monitoring projects. The best way is to really look for your local programs. I know in the Hudson Valley, the DEC, the Hudson River Estuary Program has some great programs, and you just go local on this one.
And wait a minute. I think Kate from the Newtown Creek Alliance has a citizen scientist solicitation for tonight. Is that right, Kate?
Glad you're squeezing me in. Yes, I'm the executive director at Newtown Creek Alliance, and tonight, in addition, we do a number of different citizen science activities, and so I encourage everybody to check out our website at newtowncreekalliance.org. But tonight, we're doing an event for Earth Day on weather monitoring and how that correlates to water quality in Newtown Creek.
Do you need volunteers?
We absolutely need volunteers, and in the interest of brevity, I'm going to direct everybody to our website because it's all there online.
Give it again.
NewtownCreekAlliance.org.
Thank you very much. Good luck tonight. And Akiko Bush, good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Monitoring the Species, Being a Scientist in the Lower Hudson Valley. Her book is called The Incidental Steward, Reflections on Citizen Science.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we have Jasper Jewell from the NYU Game Center. And I think that's not like where the games are kept. I think that's an actual academic institution. But he's written a book called The Art of Failure, an essay on the pain of playing video games. It's about learning to lose through your time playing. Stay with us.